So then, the Romney free lunch at the White House, huh? Yeah. Wouldn't that be an entitlement? Well, what do you know?
Not much, you.
Welcome to an encore performance of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, we have one for the books author, Joe Queenan, plus we'll have another grand round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who's still trying to wrap his mind around ice on Mercury, it's Michael Feldman.
Ice on Mercury. Oh, and I got Michael Feldman back. Oh, that's scary. All right, put down your Michael Feldman masks. I've seen it all before. Not for a while. That was a high school picture. Yeah, high school graduation. Less gold, I'm going to get you for this. So, yeah, ice on Mercury. What about that, huh? Ice on Mercury. Isn't that hard? Well, how do you dress for that kind of weather? You don't know what to wear. My mother always said, you know, it's hot, it's cold, you don't know what to wear.
Layers.
On Mercury. Layers on Mercury. That's a good idea. All right, so then, yeah, the Romney lunch. I'm still stuck on that idea there at the White House. He better declare it on his taxes, if any. Ends up being part of that 47% he was so, you know, critical about. See, a catered White House lunch, that should be a pretty penny, don't you think? Even without coffee and booze and soda pop, it still adds up. Well, in all the other news that isn't, charges that the Egyptian president seeks to be a pharaoh only increase when the Constitution is written in hieroglyphics. Long way to go to get nowhere, I agree. I say if he's okay with the embalming, let him be pharaoh. Got to take the brains out through the nose. That's the only part that stops me. Okay. You know, something pretty bad must have happened to the Egyptians if they're that touchy about pharaohs. That's all I can say. And I don't get it because the Jews did all the work. You know, on the pyramid. That's why we got out of the trade, so, you know, that pyramid work. Anyway, more news that isn't. We got here two winners in the $600 million Powerball tax liability. One guy's a mechanic. Boy, his rate's going to go up. $1 million an hour, I'm sure, really. Palestine gets upgrade from is not real status. I thought that was better than that. Is not real. That's what she called it. Hamas, a leader to star in 77 Gaza Strip. President Obama makes a counterintuitive plea to avoid economic meltdown and disaster from the Tinker Toy Factory. His ground team really is not what it was during the run-up to this. It's a fiscal cliffhanger out there, basically. Speaker Boehner is playing whack-a-mole in the House right now. But, you know, fiscal cliff, come on. Man-made, so it's more of a fecal cliff, really. Fiscal cliff. The phrase fiscal cliff is expected to expire on January 15th. We'll never hear it again. That's the good news. In other news, Weather Channel names its first winter storm Bejeezers. Oh, Bejeezers, that was a storm. They get to name all the storms now. First one is Bejeezers, is what I would think, if it were me, but it's not, so I'll cross that out. The European Union trades Greece to the third world for a country to be named later. Geneticists say half of all human mutations have occurred since the advent of the Tea Party. Therefore, people who don't believe in evolution evolve the most. Isn't that interesting? New home sales are stagnant and don't smell too good either. For some reason, Republicans continue to think Benghazi is a red state. Overly concerned. Beginning to lose patience. Oh, it's supposed to be me. I'm beginning to lose patience. Say as if saying, as if talking. You know, I'm beginning to lose patience with Lindsay Lohan. Wasn't even worth saying anyway. But Liz Taylor got past National Velvet. Lindsay needs to get past Mean Girls. Okay. I'm just saying, that's not a joke or anything. It does look like Lindsay is out of the running for Secretary of State, however. The North Korean missile capable of hitting South Korea collides with the South Korean missile capable of hitting North Korea. If I could say it, that's what I would have said. New plan on the fiscal cliff from the English department. I call it the Heathcliff and let Emily Bronte deal with it. Don't tickle me Elmo sales crash right before Christmas. Moving right along. Rutgers Red Knights and the Delaware Terrapins. Come on, they should not even make the big 10,000. Thank you, John, for being here. I mean, what is a Red Knight? What is a Terrapin? Yeah. They even have football programs at those schools? I don't think they do. No, they don't. No, they don't. Madison West will join the Big Ten as soon as everybody's 18. We're looking forward to that. The Big 100 will be by then. Cows struck by milk truck in Greene County, adding insult to injury. But it's true. May not be funny, but it's true. Happened. One would hope the rest home cafeteria was not picking mushrooms for its soup from the lawn. And anyhow, the Chicago man who wrestled a goose into his SUV said he was going to take it to his brothers right after his soccer game. So, more on this at 10. Did you read about that?
No.
Okay, yeah. The PGA bans belly putters. Just when I get the belly for one. Belly putters. You use a belly putter, sir? I can see why. Does it work for you?
It does.
It does, really? Okay. Problem is you can't see the ball. You know, you got a belly putter. Can't see the really end of your belly putter at all.
Very easily.
What?
It's longer so you can hit the ball very easily. You don't have to see it.
Yeah, you're not supposed to tee off with it, though. It's a putter. Where was I? Okay. Huge oil discovery leads to the United Arab Inuits. There's a joke that doesn't come up too often. Small business owners pessimistic, but then maybe they shouldn't go into small business. Consumers optimistic. They can spend as little as possible. So there is consumer optimism. Scientists discover a new smell, can't tell where it's coming from. UW Badgers play for the Big Ten title for last time before they have to face Rutgers. And no deer for Governor Walker, but he did bag a home ec teacher and a pretty good-sized veteran. That's all the news. That is. Thank you so much, and good night. And see you later. I take you now to Tarrytown, New York, and not a moment too soon, where Joe Queenan awaits. He has a new book out called One for the Books. It's a book about books. Hey, Joe.
Hi.
How you doing?
I've never been better, but I say that every time I'm on your show.
I say it all the time, and I mean it. You know, it's a sad thing, really, in my case.
Well, you're from the Midwest.
Okay.
So, to say it here is just a flat-out lie.
Yeah, yeah. I met a guy one time who said, used to say all the time, I've never had a better day. You know,
I'm not going that far.
Yeah, no, that's going too far. So you read a lot, huh?
I do, yes. Thousands and thousands and thousands of books. And somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000.
6,000 and 8,000. What are you reading right now, Joe?
I'm reading about 24 books simultaneously.
Yeah, do you finish any of those? I mean, we'd be down.
I do, yeah, I do. I finished Middlemarch on Labor Day. It took me 34 years. I started it in 1978, and I finished it on Labor Day. The first 31 years were the hardest. Right now I'm reading like three mysteries. I'm reading The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. I just read a great book.
I know how that ends, by the way.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, okay.
I just read a great book by Margot Lipsey called The Flight of Gemma Hardy, which is a retelling of Jane Eyre. And I always read 20, 30, 40 books simultaneously. It's a disease.
No one has ever actually finished Middlemarch before, so I want to congratulate you on that.
A lot of people say that that is the greatest book ever written.
Oh.
And they're completely delusional.
Name one flaw with Middlemarch.
There's no plot.
Oh, okay. That's a big one.
All the characters in it are repellent. You can't get from the beginning of one sentence to the other.
I said one,
and
Joe.
It's unbelievably boring. I said in the book that... Yeah. You know how people have a desert island reading list? Middlemarch was on my desert island reading list, and I realized that if I was shipwrecked and I started swimming towards that island and saw that Middlemarch was there, no matter how many sharks were in the water, I would swim to another island.
Yes. Well, I guess you made your point with that then.
I did.
Do you resent or regret spending all those years on it?
On Middlemarch?
On Middlemarch.
It wasn't like I was doing anything else worthwhile with my life. So, and I think a lot of people in this country, including everybody in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives, could read Middlemarch, and it would be an improvement over what they've been doing for the past few months.
Yeah. Basically, vote.
I would be willing to bet that there is no one in American public life who has ever read Middlemarch or who has ever even heard of Middlemarch. They've heard of The Fountainhead.
Yeah.
But they've heard of Atlas Shrugged.
Atlas Shrugged.
But I don't think any of them have ever read Middlemarch.
Yeah,
Certainly not Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, Polly Ryan likes your Ayn Rand books.
Yes. Yeah, she's a crypto-fascist.
Yes, not even crypto.
I don't even know what that means, but it's safer than saying that she's a fascist.
Yeah, she's not crypto, I don't think. What does crypto mean in that case? Doesn't crypto mean hidden or something?
You know, William F. Buckley used to use that term, and I picked up on that. When he wanted to say that somebody was horrible, he would preface it by saying that they were crypto-horrible, and I just thought that's great. But I never knew whether he spelled it with a C or a K.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, and William Buckley, I used to watch a show all the time, whatever that was called.
Firing Line.
Firing Line, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I always thought he was so smart, and then I actually wrote down some of the words and looked him up, and he was just saying stupid things with big words in them.
That's right. That was his style of writing. He was a terrible writer, but he had an extensive vocabulary.
Yeah. Did you do that? I mean, is part of your reading to develop vocabulary?
Yes. I underline words that I think could be useful somewhere down the line, and then I write them in the back of the book, and then at the end I go back and look up what they mean, and then they're almost never books that you can – they're almost never words that you could use in the type of writing that I do.
Yeah.
Like ultramontane. Or antinomian. You can't use them.
Yeah. Well, of course,
they mean something about being beyond the mountains and having to do with the Vatican in the 14th century. You never use stuff like that in satire, ever.
And plus, you read in French, don't you, most of the time?
I read a lot in French, yes, yeah. I do. And it's amazing because I can read French really well, but I have an appalling accent, and I've never really improved on that in all the years that I have been speaking French. And I don't care.
Yeah.
I simply don't care.
No, that's what I like about you.
Yeah, the French don't like it.
Yeah.
The French think you should make an effort.
Right, and yet they don't.
They don't.
Yeah. Was it a problem being bookish growing up in your neighborhood? When you grew up,
You didn't let on that you were reading a lot of books. Yeah. I mean, you didn't read books in public. I grew up in a housing project.
Yeah.
Not a lot of readers in housing projects.
No.
Even fewer today. So you didn't let on. And you didn't use words like ultramontane or Gnosticism in housing projects, especially in Philadelphia. But the stuff comes in handy later.
Yeah. Did you?
I mean, the great thing about books, of course, is that if you're living in a housing project, read a book, and then you won't think you're in a housing project anymore. You think you're on Treasure Island, or you're in the Scottish Highlands, or you're, you know, getting dragged around the gates of Troy by some, you know, steroid-laden Greek warrior, which is an improvement over being in a housing project.
Yeah. Or maybe much the same in some cases.
Yeah, depends.
Yeah.
You know, we all have different tastes.
Depends who's on steroids in the project.
Exactly.
So is that then is the appeal of books, right? For you, even as a child, was to escape in your environment or to go in a different one?
Life sucks. So you read books because, I mean, people read books because they hate their job so much.
Uh-huh.
When you go to work, I don't even have a job and I hate my job.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're on the bus, when you're on the train, when you're in the subway and you see people reading their Kindles or reading their e-books and they're reading 50 Shades of Grey or they're reading Tom Clancy, it's because they hate their jobs. And
yeah.
That's why people read, I think. Yeah. It's the same as video games. It's exactly the same thing. It's pure escapism.
Yeah. Hate their
I mean,
jobs.
Every once in a while, people read to learn something, I suppose. But
yeah.
Like they might read, you know, the Shelby Foote's History of the Civil War to find out what happened at Shiloh. But basically, people read just because they hate their lives.
But surely that is not still your motivation.
Oh, no, I absolutely hate my life. I just can't. I have a really good job, It's still work. Nobody wants to go to work.
Yeah.
Everybody would rather stay home. And I mean, not everybody would like to stay home and read. A lot of people would like to stay home and like oil their guns or, you know, shoot small animals or watch football. You know, watch the University of Delaware play Rutgers. But,
yeah, that'd be great.
But I would just stay home and read all day.
By the way, do you know either of those two teams, and do they have football programs? Because we're concerned.
The University of Delaware does have a football program. Yeah, Rutgers has a great program. The guy who moved from Rutgers took over Notre Dame, Brian Kelly. And
yeah, but he's gone now.
He is gone, yeah. The University of Delaware has a football program,
yeah.
But it's most famous because the Philly Fanatic was a graduate of the University of Delaware. Just throwing that out there.
And a Terrapin is...
It's a turtle.
It's a type
of
turtle.
It's a turtle.
Okay.
So it's a turtle or a tortoise. I never knew the difference, but I'm in the ballpark.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
By the way,
also the name of the worst Grateful Dead record. And there are a lot of really great bad Grateful Dead records, but Terrapin's the worst.
That's true. Isn't it? And what about those Eagles while we're on the subject here?
What about them?
What about them? Is it true that fans are wearing bags over their heads now?
Only if Don Henley appears on stage. Only if Don Henley appears on stage.
Yeah, I heard it. I thought it was great.
No, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's terrible. And the head coach, of course, as you know, used to be a coach with the Green Bay Packers. So we blame your state for all of this.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
We've been blamed for worse.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the subject at hand here now. In your home, and growing up or something, were there a lot of books? Because in our house, we had National Geographic's and The Sexual Habits of Mankind, one book.
No.
That was hidden, but I found it. And that was it for reading material.
I never saw my mother read a book. My mother read newspapers, and she read Reader's Digest, but she never read books. My dad read books all the time, and he mostly read books that had the title, The Day Somebody Died. It would be like The Day Christ Died, or The Day Lincoln Died, or The Day Wild Bill Hickok Died, or The Day Carl Sandburg Died. He loved books about the day that somebody died.
Yeah.
He had like thousands of them.
That was a series, The Day Somebody Died series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of my father's favorite books are my favorite books. He dropped out of high school in ninth grade, but a lot of his books are my favorite books. He loved Kidnapped. He loved Beaugest. Beaugest is absolutely one of the most fantastic books ever written. Mm-hmm. He loved The Razor's Edge, and a lot of those books are my favorite books. He liked Hemingway, and that's pretty good. I mean, imagine today, go anywhere in the United States and try to find somebody who dropped out of high school in ninth grade who's read W. Somerset Maugham. I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
And it's something that we've lost in this country.
No.
We have lost the there used to be a tradition in this country of sort of literate proles. Now we don't have literate anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really sad.
Yeah.
But let's get on to a jauntier note.
Okay, you got one?
No. Not off the top of my head.
Are you a collector of books then? I mean, obviously you buy books to actually read them, which is a good thing. Would you collect them as well, first editions and manuscripts
and
all that?
No, I don't know. I would collect, like, when I go into a museum and I see a Da Vinci, I want to own that. That would be great to collect that. That's a first edition. A Raphael, Picasso, yeah. But books are just, they're just books. And having somebody's name inside them doesn't mean anything to me. I've had people show me books, that manuscripts by F. Scott Fitzgerald and Marcel Proust and everything. And it's just typing. The object, the book itself, is not I enjoy having books. Because I love physical, I like to write in books, and I like to have them all around me, but it doesn't make any difference to me whether they're autographed or whether they're first editions or anything like that. I don't care about that.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I saw one time, I went to Roanoke, you know, Oxford, yes. Faulkner's place.
Yes.
And they have in his, I think his bedroom, or maybe his writing room, but I think it was his bedroom actually. He had sketched out one of the books on the wall. The general outline of the book is on the wall. That I'd like to own that wall. That'd be cool.
I got to tell you, I read a lot of Faulkner, and I didn't get the impression that he sketched the things out very carefully. I was from start to finish and couldn't figure out what the hell any of the books were about.
Yeah. Well, the wall was in bad shape.
Last year when they came out with As I Lay Dying, it's printed on four different color papers so that you can figure out which character is saying which. So I would have loved to have been in the room where he sketched that one out.
Yeah.
There's a great story about Faulkner. You know the story about him being in L.A. as a screenwriter, right?
No.
And he said he couldn't get anything done, and like Jack Warner said, go home, so he drove home to Oxford, Mississippi.
Yeah.
I think that's a fantastic story.
That's good
And there's
story.
Another story about
and
Faulkner.
And it's fast, too.
Yeah.
It's a short
story. When he was at the University of Virginia, I think Jack Kennedy invited him up to the White House for dinner, and he turned him down, and when he was asked why, he said, that's a long way to drive for a dinner. That's fantastic that he did that. Even if it's not true, all stories about famous writers that aren't true automatically are true.
Yeah.
They're so great.
And there will
all stories about Oscar Wilde and Ernest Hemingway are great.
Yeah. If true or not, right?
Yeah. Or like Ernest Hemingway got in the ring with Jack Dempsey. I don't believe that for a minute, but it's a great story. And I love it. And he single-handedly like killed sharks with his bare hands, and I love those stories. Yeah. And I don't care if they're not true. They're truthy, as Maureen Dowd says.
Yeah. But speaking of Rowan, and they also had his Underwood portable typewriter there, you know. So I actually went out on the internet and tried to buy one because I thought I could write like Faulkner if I just had the damn typewriter, you know. But it didn't work.
It rarely does.
Yeah.
My first typewriter was a Facet. Do you remember those?
Facet?
Yeah, they were Swedish typewriters.
No.
I won it in a card game from a Korean guy I used to live in a house with. The only Korean guy that I ever beat in a card game. And I won it from him for about $130, and I won $130 from him in a card game, and I went out and bought the typewriter, and I still have it. It's fantastic. It's an indestructible typewriter.
Yeah. Is that what you write on?
No. I gave up typewriters as soon as computers came.
Yeah.
Because when computers came in, you're always improving the thing that you're working on. So you write something, and then you don't have any record of how horrible it looked when you started it because you erase everything with the word processing.
Yeah.
So it's great. If Shakespeare had had a computer, he could have really turned into somebody.
Yeah, he could have been someone.
Not to mention Faulkner.
By the way, do you think that Shakespeare wrote Shakespeare? This has been bothering me ever since I read that Mark Twain thing many years ago. You know, because he did not. Twain didn't believe that Shakespeare wrote Shakespeare. You want to weigh in on this?
Yes. People always want to tell you that Shakespeare's plays were written by some rich guy like Mitt Romney because nobody wants to believe that Shakespeare could have been a working class guy. And it just really annoys people that Shakespeare did not go to Oxford, did not go to Cambridge, did not have one of those fancy degrees. It just really, really annoys people that all the people who went to those schools couldn't write like William Shakespeare.
Okay.
He was a ninth grade dropout, just like my dad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Shakespeare absolutely wrote those things, just like the Beatles absolutely wrote all their songs, and they were working class.
Yeah.
They didn't go to fancy schools.
Sure.
So,
okay, thank you. That makes sense to me. The only other thing, in terms of a manuscript that I've ever seen that ever impressed me, it's not really a manuscript, I saw Vince Lombardi's notes on a yellow legal pad, things he was saying to the players at St. Norbert's there, namely, keep your clothes on around the nuns. And I saw it written out in his handwriting, the things that he had, you know, there's a checklist of things, and that was one of them on there, you know, undress in front of nuns was one of the notes. And to me, that's
fabulous. I just love the story about Vince Lombardi when he fined Horning $500. He fined two of the guys for breaking training and going out in the middle of the night. He fined two of them $250, and he fined Horning $500, and they complained, and then they started walking up the stairs, and Lombardi said to them, and Paul, if you ever find anything out there that's worth $500, wake me up, and I'll go out there with you.
Probably never happened.
I think he may have been talking about women.
Yeah, it might have been. Yeah, good story, but probably never happened. And you didn't dry. Now you were an inveterate reader, I guess we could say that, right? I mean, you were a compulsive, inveterate, always reading. In school, you're reading some other book, right?
Right.
Type of reader.
And I always sat behind a fat kid so I could prop up Ian Fleming books. I read all of the James Bond books with them propped up against the back of this really fat kid who sat in front of me.
He didn't mind a book in his back?
You know, he was so fat, I don't think he could even feel it.
Oh, jeez.
He was a Razorback.
Razorback. Okay. But you didn't, yeah. Now, and you said you didn't learn to drive until you're 51, and that's because of your reading habit?
That's right, yeah. And also, I didn't learn to drive until somebody paid me to do it. GQ paid me $10,000 to learn to drive, so I did it. I was just holding out for the big money. But all those years that I didn't drive, that's like all those years on buses and jitneys and trains and planes, you're reading. And that's at least 2 hours a day. And that's why I've read so many of these books. If you read 2 hours a day, it will work out to about 70 or 80 books a year. And you know, then by the end of your life, you'll have read a lot of books. And driving has a lot to do with it. Today I'm driving down to Philadelphia, and I won't do any reading, and I don't listen to audiobooks. I can't stand those things.
No.
I listen to music all the time. But no, I read four. I read at least 4 hours a day, every single day of my life. You know, somebody once told me that the real message of Dracula is that the reason he's killing all these people is because he has a really long reading list. And the only way he can get caught up on all the books that he's wanted to read is by sucking the blood out of, you know, winsome virgins. And it's, so he's not nasty. He's really just a very, very compulsive and a well-organized reader.
Well,
but I don't know if that's true, because I could never get more than three pages into Dracula. It's a totally unreadable book.
Yeah, didn't read that.
No.
None of the. Did you read the Frankenstein? Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Any of those?
Yeah, it's a great book, and it was written because of a bet. There were four of them in a room, and they had a bet, and two of them went off and wrote something pretty good, actually. A Polish guy, John Podorsky, I think, wrote a vampire book, but she wrote Frankenstein, and it's absolutely fantastic book. It's great, and that book is about poverty. That's what that book is about. It's not about monsters.
Yeah.
It's about society creates monsters and then treats the monsters monstrously. And then act surprised that the monsters behave badly. It's about poverty. That's what the book is about.
Excellent. Good.
Little known fact.
Very good interpretation.
Thank you.
And you don't do e-readers because you can't write on them, right?
I just hate them.
Yeah.
Just hate more machines.
They are not a book-like experience at all, because you can't leave them open to your page, for one thing.
No, and also you can't let, you know, you're reading something and somebody comes along and says, oh, wow, I read that book, and then you have a conversation. You can't do that with an e-reader. But it's also, yeah, I write in books. The way I learned to write was I underlined everything that I thought was fantastic or funny or memorable in Oscar Wilde and Mark Twain and Graham Greene and all those people. But the problem with that is if you take a play like Macbeth or Julius Caesar, you underline every single word. Every single thing that Shakespeare says in those plays was turned into a book title, or it's a famous quote, and you just give up. That's the first thing I would tell anybody who wants to be a writer. Don't read Shakespeare, because you'll quit. It's like Bach. Don't listen to Bach if you want to be a musician. Listen to Justin Bieber.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. Listen to Katy Perry. You'll do fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a recommendation.
For best results, listen to John Tesh. He's off and running as a musician.
Never seen that on a label anywhere. But you're not social about your reading. I mean, you don't really like discussing books or something you just read. You rather hate it, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's appalling. People just say the stupidest things, and it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know why the gods were so mean in the Iliad, you know. I don't know why Jane Eyre had such a hard time. Why didn't she come in out of the rain?
Yeah.
What's Heathcliff's problem?
Yeah, Heathcliff, you know?
Yeah, they're just like, people read books like it's like the Amazon reviews. You ever read those? Those are great. You know, people read Mein Kampf and they say, you know, what's up with the Jewish thing? And they're just, you know, it's just their contribution to the public discourse is just a complete waste of time. If you go to book clubs, they use terms like foreshadowing and leitmotifs. You know, if you're reading a book by Tom Clancy or Anita Shreve, there aren't any leitmotifs in those books, trust me. There's no foreshadowing in Stephen King and John Grisham. Believe me, that was in The Scarlet Letter.
Yeah.
Leave that stuff alone.
Probably very little, I would think.
No, and I hate getting gifts from people, because one of the things is people give gifts along ethnic lines. So as soon as they find out you're Queenan, you're Irish, they give you copies of Angela's Ashes. So I have like 968 copies of Angela's Ashes in my house. And people do that.
Have you read any of them? Did you read any of them or just?
I did. In fact, I wrote a story for GQ a long time ago called Angelique's Ashes, and it was about what would it have been like if Frank McCourt was Belgian. And I got invited, and nobody who read GQ got the joke. Yeah. Not one person who read GQ. Actually, nobody reads GQ. They just look at pictures.
Yeah.
But I did get invited to Limerick, which is where Frank McCourt grew up, to give a speech. And when I got there, I found out that all they wanted to do was talk to me about how much they hated Frank McCourt, because he did the classic thing. He left, and he made a lot of money in America, and that really makes people in Ireland mad.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Not supposed to happen. You know what? Parenthetically, I guess, there's one book by Roth somewhere where the Jewish guy wants to go to Ireland and his girlfriend, who is Irish, wants to go to Israel. And they can't agree on it. And so they finally go to Ireland or something because he wants to be there so bad. So there's a certain thing with, I've noticed among Jewish readers, a real Irish obsession, I think. They really love the Irish writers, even though they're somewhat anti-Semitic.
They are anti-Semitic, yes. But they can really write.
They can really write, can't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And they all leave Ireland. I mean, the first thing they do is, they're like James Joyce or Samuel Beckett or Oscar Wilde, they just leave. Yeah. That's changed a lot in recent years, but mostly they just get up and leave. But I think I've always found that really interesting, that I never had any desire to go to Ireland. I've been there many times, and I love it, but I never had any desire to go there. I wanted to go to France. I mean, I just wanted to go to France, and all I wanted to do was go to Paris and go to London and then just keep going back. And I've done that my entire life. My entire life, every summer, just before we're getting ready to go someplace, my wife will go, "Do you want to go to Italy?" And I'll go, "Yeah." And she goes, "You're sure?" And I'll say, "Yeah." And then just before we book the thing on Expedia, I say, "Let's go to Paris again." I've been to Paris like 40 times, and it's just, that's where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is that I just think that there's the whole point about being American is you don't have to be shackled by your ethnic background.
No.
You know, just because you're an immigrant from Russia doesn't mean you can't like books by Ishmael Reed and Toni Morrison. Maybe that's more relevant to your experience.
I always
found that all those French guys were, I just love reading that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good.
The Irish guys are dreary.
They are. That appeals to Jewish guys a lot. You know. That's a real Jewish appealer.
There's a lot of drinking in Irish fiction, and there's a lot of drinking in Irish life.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the thing that's great about French books is they don't drink alcohol. They don't drink liquor. They drink wine. So it makes you feel like you're in a different, you know, it makes you feel like you're not in your house with your relatives.
Yeah, but they eat those little cookies and just go on forever about them.
They do. And they make really, really bad films.
Yeah. I mean, Proust, you don't care for Proust, right? Do you?
You know, it's hard to, it's like asking, do you care for the, what do you think about the Sahara Desert? You know, it's capacious.
How so?
It's big. It's daunting. I do actually like him. I just finished reading the fourth volume of Remembrance of Things Past.
Also never done before. Yeah.
You know, it's 500 pages about a party that the guy went to. It's like literally 500 pages, and only about halfway through the book did I find out that the Princess of Guermont and the Duchess of Guermont are two different people. I'm 1,500 pages into the book, and I finally discovered that they're two completely different people. So I got to go back and start at the beginning. And literally nothing.
Factor that in.
Middlemarch is like Batman compared to Proust. Nothing ever happens in Proust. But there's something
about it. You like it, okay.
Yeah.
Nothing happens, but you like that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, can I just throw in a plug for a really great French movie that just came out? There's a movie out with Marion Cotillard, which is called Rust and Bone, and it's about a girl who works in one of those like water world type places who gets her legs eaten off by a killer shark, and then she falls in love with a North African kickboxing guy who's got a son who used to work as a mule for these drug dealers.
Yeah, so.
And I just thought, you know,
it's been done.
What's going on with the French?
Yeah.
You know, and the night before I went to see Lincoln. Lincoln cost $6.7 trillion to make.
Yeah.
And the night before that, I saw Skyfall. Skyfall cost $100 billion to make.
Yeah,
and then I saw the movie about the girl gets her legs eaten off by the killer whale. It cost like $15 to make that movie. Shot on home video.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the killer whale was one of those inflatable little ham puppets that you get in stores.
Rust and Bone?
Rust and Bone, yeah.
Sounds good.
I recommend it highly.
Joe Queenan, thank you for your time. Thank you for your information.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Joe Queenan. Thanks. The new one here is called One for the Books, about his love of books and obsession with same. So it's, and it's very funny, as you can imagine. So I recommend that. It's on Viking. It's a Viking book. All right. Europe. Now, of course, John is our reader on this show. John is always in one book or another, aren't you?
Yeah.
What are you reading right now, John?
Well, it's fiction I'm reading. Well, I'm rereading Paul Bowles' Under the Sheltering Sky.
Oh.
Kind of an interesting. You know that one?
So you read that before?
I did a long time ago, like 25 years ago.
I don't think I ever read that. No. What's that about?
That's just a good story of traipsing around the desert and...
With Proust?
With Proust in tow and vomiting on buses and stuff. I don't know.
Oh, I'll have to borrow that sometime. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
He's our reader anyway.
Yeah.
And so, Jeff, are you reading something now?
Sure, yeah.
What are you reading?
Autobiography of jazz bassist Ron Carter and Horace Silver. Autobiography of him.
They're both the same autobiography? How can two guys share an autobiography?
You've been reading that Horace Silver for the last 10 years, haven't you?
Good. Okay. Okay, here's a little music then. Is this the song you're working on a little earlier?
Well, you didn't hear this one. Well, we'll play that one in the second hour.
I'll Take Romance?
No.
Oh. Is that it?
You gave it away now.
Oh, sorry.
Can't play it at all.
Oh, okay. Oh no. Now you're going to be mad at me.
Once again, it's Michael Feldman.
The Queen and Bruce in the Desert and all that stuff. So we just have time to hear from one audience member. And well, your name is?
I forgot. Chuck.
Chuck, of course. Chuck, that's up my tongue. And you're from... You're from Rome, Wisconsin.
Yes, sir.
Okay. If we were coming to Rome, Chuck, what would we want to do? Where would we want to go? What would we want to see?
Well, actually, there's nothing there.
No. Okay, thanks very much, Chuck. That's Chuck from Rome, Wisconsin. Anything you want to add to that? Are you happy with that?
No, I was just being silly. There, it's a kind of a summer tourist place where all the people with a lot of money come up and make a lot of nuisance for everybody else that lives there.
For what? Where do they go?
Water skiing and ATVs and, you know, just terrible.
When in Rome, you know, what can you say? Thank you very much for cleaning up. That's all the time we have for the audience interaction. We have to know who can and cannot participate in the quiz. That means, of course, the four disclaimers. Yes, this is it. You're on. This is it. This is it. How you doing? And you are?
Leslie.
Leslie?
Yep.
Okay, go over.
All right. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Two, what's this fiscal click I keep hearing about? Three, persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. Four, all opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Thank you. What are you looking at me? Thank you very much. No, you can keep that. I'll never use that one again. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to try them at the quiz. That's right, if you'd like to try the What Do You Know quiz, if you've waited all your life. for a chance to show what you've learned. Simply raise your hand or your arm or both, indicating someone who wants to play the quiz. That's what we're looking for here right now. You're that one person. Now, there's one in every crowd who wants to play the quiz. You would think if they come to a quiz show, they'd be wanting to play the quiz more than they actually do. But so I'm glad. Thank you very much for volunteering. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. And you are?
I'm Carrie.
Carrie? Uh-huh. If I'm around here, Carrie?
I live here in Madison.
Oh, you do. Okay, Carrie, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Yeah.
Right about this?
Yeah.
What's even a bad reason? I'll do anything.
I'm the only one here willing to do so?
Yes, because you're... Okay, that's an excellent reason. Come on, Carrie. As we mount the What Do You Know stage here in Cavernous, known as Terrace. Yes. There are headphones if you want them. But you can only hear this show on them, so they're kind of limited. And it's Carrie with a C?
Or, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. How are you?
I'm great.
And so what line or occupation or avocation are you in?
I'm a social worker.
Social worker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't think I have.
No, don't worry. You don't.
Skip that.
They're useless. okay, that's good. And you work for a...
I work for Dane County.
For Dane County?
In the mental health field.
Mental health? Well, I'll be seeing you soon. Well, very nice to have you here.
We can put you on a really nice waiting list.
Oh, waiting. Okay, all right. I should start now then.
Yeah,
you take my name with you, will you? Because I'm going to need it. I know that. All right, you know how this quiz works? Someone out there plays along with you.
Uh-huh.
All right, and in order to do that, what must they do?
They have to pick up the phone.
Sarah Nix?
They have to pick up the phone and
dial. Are you cold?
I am. It's cold in here.
Okay.
Do you want the phone number now?
You're wrapped in a very lovely garment, I must say.
Thanks. The number is 1-800-942.
Or at least it looks good on you. I don't know. If I saw it hanging up, I probably wouldn't think anything
about it.
You
can borrow it. We can see.
No, I don't think it would have the same effect. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Don't touch that digital keypad. This is an encore of What Do You Know? No need to call now.
Okay, here's the qualifying question. You get this, you get to play. Though it doesn't look a day over 6 million years old, the Grand Canyon could be as old as what? How many years old, the Grand Canyon? For years, they thought it was only 6 million years old, a trifle in the history of time. But it could be as old as what? Within how many millions of years should they get this?
10.
Okay. Sounds good. And let's go to the phones right now. Ned's on the line from Erie, PA. Hey, Ned.
Hey there. How are you?
Pretty good. How's life in Erie treating you?
Pretty good so far today.
Yeah?
Yep.
Yesterday, not so good?
Yesterday was fine, too. We got no snow on the ground, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. You get a lot of that lake effect, don't you?
We do, indeed.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing, then. The Grand Canyon is 6 million years old, they thought, but it could be as old as how old?
80 million years.
80 million?
What, yeah.
What did you say, within how many?
I said within 10 million.
10 or 20?
10 or 20, yeah.
Yeah, 20. You're right. Okay. 60 million. Because one source I said that actually said 70 million. So I think it's only fair that you should get that, Ned.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So how's your weekend coming up? You got something you're going to today? Or?
Yeah, I'm on my way to a yoga class.
Oh, you are. Sarah does yoga. What sort of yoga do you do?
I guess general purpose yoga.
All purpose yoga. I get that, because you don't have to sift it like some other yogas you get. Well, very good. Ned, this is Carrie. She's your partner.
Hi, Ned.
What was your name again?
Carrie.
Hi, Carrie. How are you?
I'm great. Are we going to win?
I think so.
Yeah. I hope so.
Okay, two of you collaborate, because this is a collaboration. We have various categories, don't we, Sarah?
We do.
And what are those?
They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay, Ned, you pick the first one. What would you like?
Places.
Places it is. Okay. In 6th century Polynesia, tribal chiefs had them, and they were 25 feet long, while commoners... they also had them, but they were more like 7 foot long. What are we talking about? 6th century Polynesia. Artifacts from Polynesia.
Artifacts. Those giant heads, maybe?
Oh. Well, I was thinking more along the line of a canoe.
Oh, okay.
But totems might be a good idea.
No, what totems?
Totems are nice. Oh, they're all wrong. Oh, everything you said is wrong. To call time on a friend. The surfboards. They had surfboards.
Oh, and that's it. Our answer was surfboards.
The bigger your board, the bigger your status. So I'm sorry. That was a very tough one, and I apologize for it, but I gave you a break entering the thing. So
that would be zero right and one wrong.
Okay, don't worry about it. You'll get this. What's left there?
Current events, people, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Things we should have learned in school.
Okay. I got that. What was that, Ned?
Oh, that was somebody honking their horn at me.
What'd you do?
Nothing. It was a friend of mine.
Oh, okay. Someone you knew. Are you parked now, or are you driving?
I am parked right now, yes.
Oh, good. Okay. Who was the guy? Who was that?
His name was Steve.
Steve?
Yeah.
Where is he going, you think?
I don't know.
We'll find out about that. School. Did pirates actually say "Arr, avast, and shiver me timbers," or not? Real pirates, actual pirates.
Arr.
I'd like to
think so. You're better at it. You'd like
I don't
to
know.
Think
what,
so.
What
I would
think,
like
Harry?
To think so.
It's not really an Arr. Answer, is it? It would like. You're real good at it, Ned. You can stop now.
Ned, what do you think?
I think yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. They did.
No, they both of them went to Eton, you know, and they spoke Queen's English. So.
Sadly, that is too wrong.
Yeah, you can't get
right.
Can't get any wronger on here. This is to be a first for us actually losing the What Do You Know quiz.
This is embarrassing.
I don't think it's happened in this millennium so far. What's left there, Sarah?
We have current events, people, science, or odds and ends.
Back to Ned, is it?
Science.
Science, yeah. Oh, he's already. Okay. Oh, this one you'll get. The ancient arthropod, Fuxianhue protensa.
Yeah, I know that one.
Ancient arthropod, you know, little buggy things. Had a surprisingly well-developed one of the following. Was it A, you know? A, B, gut? Or C, brain? Surprisingly well-developed, you know? A gut or a brain?
It's a you know.
How to answer.
You know.
Okay, you know.
Yeah.
The inflection, you know.
Yeah,
you
I'm
know.
Sorry, I got my inflection wrong. On my,
Are there any
I always get the inflection wrong on my, you
there,
know, I don't
Carrie?
Know why that, what?
Are there any arthropod specialists in the audience there, Carrie?
No, we Anybody? Have some arthropods here, though, actually.
Do they have surprisingly developed brains?
Brain is right.
All right.
Oh, yeah. We got to stop right there before this goes any further. Yeah, they're brains. They have a three-part brain and a whole nervous system. And that's not bad for being 520 million years old. So that's very exciting. And
the categories remaining are current
no,
events.
No, what's the score?
Oh, yes. Right. One right.
Yay.
Two wrong.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Okay. Now the categories.
Current events, people, or odds and ends.
Okay. Gary.
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends. This could be anything. John used to say that, no more. Which sex navigates by landmarks and which sex navigates by distance?
I would think women by landmarks, yeah.
Okay, and so then by men would be by distance.
By distance, yeah.
Okay, that's Ned, do you want to weigh in on this?
That sounds about right to me.
Okay. I don't think we have too much trouble.
Or could
saying
be the other
that.
Way around.
I wouldn't go there.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right.
All right.
Women tend to use landmarks. Men tend to use distance markers to get directions from their own. Women will say, turn by where the silo used to be.
Seems more useful way to get around.
So that would be...
That would be two right and
two
wrong.
Two right and two wrong.
Big question.
Okay. So then this is it then. Huh?
This is it.
Okay,
yeah.
What's left there?
Current events or people.
Current events or people? Huh? Oh, it's Ned. Yeah, Ned.
People.
Where'd you say you were going again, Ned?
To a yoga class.
Oh, yoga class. That's right. Are you going to be late?
No, I shouldn't be.
No. Percentage of people who never wear the little Victoria's Secret gift they receive from their partners. Never. The percentage of people.
Never. Not even once.
People here, because we're all inclusive. Who never wear the little Victoria's Secret gift from their partner? Is it 20%, 33 and a third percent, or half? Never even try it on. Never even look at it again. after doing this with it.
I would think most everybody would at least try it on.
Okay, Ned?
It seems like they get worn once, maybe. I don't know. I've never received a gift like that.
Can't pick them up. You know? Yeah, very nice. Where to pick it up? Yes.
Would it be maybe 20%?
20% is right, unbelievable. Holy cow, what a comeback. What if they win?
Well, Carrie, you'll be able to fix glasses, watches, electronics, and more with the assortment of wrenches, screwdrivers, diagonal cutters, and pliers, all made of imported industrial-grade steel in a deluxe mini toolkit from the Duluth Trading Company. Ned, jumpstart your day with Steep and Brew Breakfast Blend, and later savor the rich, smooth taste of Costa Rican terrazzo, precision-roasted in Madison by Steep and Brew Coffee. That's coffee done right. And each of you can recapture your cherished imaginary childhood growing up in the heartland pasture paradise of Wisconsin with a bar of What Do You Smell soap from the Screaming Porch Gift Company, and while away the long winter nights playing What Do You Know the Party Game, including the heartwarming Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Well done. Thanks, Carrie. Thanks, Plant. Ned, hang on. We'll make sure you get that. Just a minute or two more. I'll get you to yoga.
Okay, great.
We'll be back live at Monona Terrace in Madison starting October 19th. For a full schedule and ticket information, click over to notmuch.com or call 608-262-2201. Coming up in the next hour of What Do You Know, Michael flushes another batch of memos, and we learn about life on Mars with astrobiologist Clark Johnson. Plus, another edition of the What Do You Know quiz. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. This is PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back to an encore presentation of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, astrobiologist Clark Johnson looks for life on Mars, and we park a jet in Beeville, Texas during our Town of the Week. Plus another hilarious round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now the man who's still waiting for his appliances to talk to one another, it's Michael Feldman.
The ramp to that. I want to hear my refrigerator talk to my stove. What would the refrigerator say to the stove? There's a joke in there somewhere, I'm sure, but I don't have it. But I mean, you know, because they said eventually all our appliances would be on the internet, right? So I assume they'd be texting one another or something like that in the kitchen. And I think you throw on the lights at night and they're all texting. All your appliances are texting one another. But what would they say? Well, you know, each week at this time, I read actual memos sent in by actual listeners. That's right. Time for thanks for the memos. Let's see what we got here now. How about the Series 503 Flushmate 3 pressure assist flushing system?
Oh boy.
Memo.
Yeah.
A classic. This is hi everyone. We just received a notice about a recall on the Series 503 Flushmate 3 pressure assist flushing system. According to the manufacturer, the system can burst at or near the vessel weld seam, releasing stored pressure. This pressure can lift the tank lid while in use, shatter the tank, posing impact or laceration hazards to consumers, and property damage. Property damage. That's my property you're talking about there, pal. Toilet manufacturers include American Standard, Crane, Elher, Gerber, Kohler, Mansfield, and St. Thomas. They have installed the Series Flushmate 3 pressure assist flushing system in their toilets. The effective part was manufactured from October 1997 to February 2008. To verify you have a tank that contains the part, locate the date code serial number on the label on the top of the Flushmate 3. The date code serial number is 16 characters long. The first six numerals of the serial number are the date code. The date code range for this recall begins... Now, you got to go to the toilet, right? No, you're going to lift the lid and try to read the serial code on your Flushmate 3. The date code range for this recall begins with the 101497, continues through 022908. If you have one or more of the affected parts, the manufacturer recommends immediately turning off the water supply to the recalled Flushmate 3 unit and stop using the system. If you're unsure if you have a recall part, contact Flushmate directly. If you have the affected part, you may be eligible for a free repair kit. Please have maintenance staff inspect your toilets to ensure they are not affected by this recall. Thank you so much for that memo, and this is worth spreading the news on. You have an impacted Flushmate 3. Now, Sarah, where can they send these memos and other, and if they have things they want to say to us, communicate things?
Yes. Well, for memos and other communications, yes, they can go to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, subject line memos, or go to notmuch.com and post it there. Okay. Snail mail also is an option.
Oh, how do they do that then?
821.
You mean a letter?
Yeah, a letter. Oh. 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706, care of What Do You Know? Thanks for the memos. They can also follow you on Twitter, you know. They could tweet. I don't think you could tweet a memo, though. That wouldn't work.
No. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No. Mm-mm. How would they follow me on Twitter?
Well, they would, look up your handle, which is @MyFeldman.
Oh, and they could follow me at MyFeldman.
It's worth doing, actually.
Yes. 17,000 tweets, almost none of which have been followed. It's like ranting on the side. You know, that's what tweeting is like, twittering, whatever they call it, tweeting. Is like the guy, you see the guys in the corners, you know, just shouting in space. It's now they do that on Twitter, you know. And they're occasionally followed by people on the street as well, but, you know, it's for different reasons. Where is Professor Clark Johnson? Professor Clark Johnson. Call for Professor Clark Johnson. There he is, Professor Clark Johnson, University of Wisconsin. He is a... astrobiologist, exogeologist. What the heck are you?
I'm honored to come after the toilet piece. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, wonderful. Probably have them at the university, I would think. You should check that.
We do. Yeah.
Yeah, got the threes? Or you might have the fours by now.
Fours? I don't know. I'll have to check.
Flushmatic fours?
I don't know. I'll have to check. Yeah.
Yeah, you are you're in, what are you? What's your
I'm an astrobiologist. I'm trained as a geologist though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is an astrobiologist? That seems to mean out in biology, out in space. That would seem to mean like little green people or something.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd term. Most people don't really know what that necessarily means. You might think that, you know, we think that the Men in Black series are all real, all the movies, you know, some Ken Burns documentary series or something like that, but that's not true.
No, we didn't think that.
Okay. I wasn't sure, though, coming on this show. Astrobiology is obviously interested in life in the universe, elsewhere on other planets, maybe Mars, but we also do a lot of work on our own planet, looking at the evolution and origin of life on Earth. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty broad, and it blends astronomy, geology, biology, mm-hmm. things like that.
Yeah. Well, I read some of your papers. I still couldn't figure out what you did, though. For example, let's see here now. Experimental determination of iron isotope fractionations among Mackinaw White at low temperatures, implications for the rock record.
Yeah, that's a pretty exciting title, isn't it?
It was engrossing.
Yeah, I bet you couldn't put that one down.
No, I held it to my forehead and tried to absorb it that way, but through the skin.
Yep.
What was that all about?
Well, we've done a lot of work with iron, so we're interested in iron cycling.
Why'd you just say that?
Well, yeah.
Done a lot of work with iron.
You know, in science, we have to make it sound, quite... impressive. And so, the longer the title, sometimes you got to put a colon in there too to make it really long.
Yeah.
That's considered a better form for scientific publications.
Maybe you don't do the titles, though. Maybe that's Brian Beard's.
Yeah. Well, we vary. We flip a coin on, titles and things like that.
I haven't
seen
anyone turn, like, for example, evidence for free oxygen in the Neo-Archean ocean based on coupled iron molybdenum isotope fractionation.
Yeah. No, that's another really mind-boggling title, isn't
it?
Oh, yeah.
To die for.
Right.
We're
trying to get that in the stores by Christmas.
Yeah. But I noticed that you are doing a lot of fractionation.
Yep, fractionations and isotopes. So these are different masses of different elements.
Okay. And why is that important to know?
They tell us something about the origin of the elements. And so that particular paper.
So before they were elements, they were something else?
No. It talked how they were cycled. So, for example, iron reacts differently whether we have oxygen in the atmosphere or whether we don't.
Naturally.
Yeah. So there you go. So whether things rust.
Why would you have to? You knew that.
Well, it also tells us whether things have been cycled by biology.
It's what?
It tells us whether things have been cycled by biology.
Oh, I see.
So that ties into this kind of astrobiology theme of, when did we have different microbes on the Earth, and could we look for that signature in a place like Mars?
Okay. Did you bring your rock?
What other papers?
Did you bring your rock, by the way?
I did bring the rock. It's right behind me.
Well, can I see your rock?
You want to see?
I'd love to see it. I've heard so much about it. He has an old rock.
You said you wanted to see an old rock.
It's a big old rock.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful rock, though.
It's going to be hard to describe this, but...
No, it's reddish.
This is 3.5 billion years old.
From, a lot of iron in there, I bet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. From the outback of Australia.
Nice rock.
It's what we call a stromatolite. It has these layers in them that are kind of conical shapes. So people maybe should imagine a small pyramid, maybe on the seafloor.
John, do you want to see this?
Yeah. It then was...
Show it to John, would you? He can't see it from that angle.
There we go. That then we layered on different photosynthetic mats on top of them. Mm-hmm. And so that's what this structure is that shows this kind of, imagine a whole bunch of...
Do they know that this rock is missing in Australia? Or did you just walk in the outback somewhere and take a rock?
Well, this is actually a locality that you have to get permission. So we have permission from the Australian government to take this out.
Oh, you did, yeah.
So these are pretty rare, 3.5 billion years old. And
how old?
3.5 billion years old.
Go on.
Yeah, no, it is.
Shut up.
Yeah, absolutely.
3.5 billion years old?
Yeah,
How old is the Earth?
About 4.5 billion years old.
So this was almost to the beginning of the Earth.
Yeah, pretty old. Yeah,
pretty close. Do we have any rocks that are actually go the whole distance back to the...
No. The Earth is so good at recycling rocks that the rock record pretty much ends...
They rise and fall, do they? They sink and...
No, it's plate tectonics, moves things around, right?
Right.
But, 3.8 billion years old is the oldest rock you can hold in your hand.
So that you have the oldest rock right now that you can hold?
No, 3.8. This is 3.5. It's a little bit younger.
Oh, it's a youngster.
Yeah, a little bit younger. Right, that's right.
Cute for that age. You could probably put it down now. That's probably pretty heavy. I'd ask to hold it, but it looks quite heavy. It almost looks like a tree trunk, fossilized.
Actually, it's silicified with silica. Mm-hmm. So it's a petrified fossil. So, yeah, absolutely. It's just analogous to a petrified tree. Only this is a microbial mat. There's no trees that are that age.
I am so startled by that information. I don't even know what to say. I say, Mike, you always know what to say. I know not what to say to that. That's a mat of what, like algae or something like that, or
bacteria. Not exactly algae, but similar.
What would it be though? Come on,
it'd be bacteria, and these were photosynthetic.
Yeah, but what would they look like? I mean,
very very small. If you look,
I know those bacteria are small, but I mean, if a mat of them would be some size.
Yes, and these were if you go out and look at this in the field, it's hard to tell just by one rock. But this is part of an ancient shoreline that's about 100 kilometers long that you can see in the field. You can walk along that whole
ancient shoreline. So ancient there were many of these.
And is that in the middle of Australia, this ancient shoreline?
It is. Yep. So,
God.
Well, things have changed in the last 3.5 billion years since those formed.
And certainly here in America, if that's where we are, right, where I'm speaking, there must be a lot of shorelines that also. that were no water next to them, is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, in Wisconsin,
part of the Wisconsin thing, isn't it?
Well, Wisconsin's much younger. Most of the rocks are about 2 billion years old in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So most of Wisconsin did not exist when these rocks were deposited in Australia.
But did we have a coast? Were we on the coast at one time?
We were, yep, about 2 billion years ago.
Cool.
So there you go.
That's so cool. All right, so then, but then Mars, there are rocks on Earth that came from Mars, true?
Yes. Yes, they're meteorites.
Happen? Oh, they're meteorites, okay.
Right, so imagine a meteorite impacting Mars, launching off some debris, and some of it finding its way as a meteorite that falls to Earth. So there's about 20 or 30.
I'm trying to imagine that. Just give me a chance here.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Very rare, right.
So there's an impact on Mars.
Right.
Sent stuff
launches
flying.
Off debris. Debris is always falling to Earth.
Do you have one of those rocks?
Well, we have some in the department, yes.
You do? You didn't bring that, I noticed.
No, I didn't, no.
Those must be pretty valuable.
Yeah, those are, because they're very small.
There are, and what can you tell from that?
We can tell, for example, the age of certain types of crust on Mars. The oldest Mars meteorite we have is about 4.1 billion years old.
Whoa.
So that gets us to really older than the rocks that we can see on Earth.
Does that mean Mars is older than Earth?
No, they're about the same age. It's just the chance of preserving certain old rocks is very low on Earth because we're always having this
plate tectonics.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
It's a nuisance, really.
Yeah, it is.
Do they not have plate tectonics on Mars, or don't we know?
No, Mars probably did not have very much plate tectonics. So the surfaces that the Curiosity rover, for example, is driving on are probably very old.
And then there was this thing where they had, say, you know, they were implying they found some dust there that was very interesting in terms of possibly biology.
Right. Yeah. That's.
And, what is your feelings about that?
Well, NASA's having a news conference on Monday, but they've already issued a pre-press statement that kind of backing off the expectations that people thought. There was a lot of speculation that they would announce that there's organic molecules that they found, and I think they've clearly said no, that's not the case.
Oh.
So
they found nothing, but they're having a press conference about it.
Well, yeah, it's hard to know exactly what happened with the team there. I think you can speculate. I don't know for sure, but you could speculate that maybe they thought they had something exciting, and maybe subsequent analyses didn't pan that out.
Yeah.
So I think we'll find out on Monday what
that's
talking
like when
about.
The thing landed and they found something looked like strange, like a piece of plastic on the surface of ancient plastic on the surface of Mars, which of course fell off of the damn thing when it was landing.
Yeah. Well, there's also a website that shows some beads, plastic beads. Did you see that on the internet?
No.
Someone put up a fake website showing that the Curiosity rover found some Mardi Gras beads. I'm not kidding. You can Google on that and you can find that. Yeah. So, okay.
Did you see this thing here? I saved it for you because I don't know if you saw it. The rocks in Morocco.
Oh, right.
Do you saw that already? You probably have that already.
No, we don't have that particular rock, but yep.
I mean, do you have the article probably?
Oh, yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Those are some chunk of Tissint meteorite. Is that the kind you have?
It's similar, yes.
But not Tissint?
No, not exactly.
Okay. These are probably better.
Probably.
Get a good Tissint.
Yeah, maybe.
Because they say they preserve some of the gases and stuff in the rock itself.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So you want to know something about the ancient atmosphere.
Yeah, and is that true of our rocks as well? Our Mars rocks? Is there atmosphere in those?
There's very little trapped gases, so it's better to try to study Mars' atmosphere actually on Mars now, which is one of the things.
Oh, yeah, you could do that. They got a thing
Curiosity rover doing now. Yeah exactly. Yeah.
I was so excited about trapped gases.
Well, no, that's important, too.
In the atmosphere.
Well, trapped gases would be of a different age than the modern.
Yeah, because
Mars
they might
atmosphere.
Have had, and we can assume they did have a much different atmosphere early several billion years ago.
Right. No, it clearly was very different.
Yes. And what do you have any conclusions about Mars? Is this an area of study of yours as to what that might have been like?
Well, most people argue that there's great evidence for liquid water on Mars probably 4 billion years ago or so. And so to have that, you must have had a much higher density atmosphere than you have today. So Mars's atmosphere has been lost over a long time.
How do you lose an atmosphere?
Mars mainly lost its atmosphere because of its small size and also because it has no magnetic field, so the solar wind abrades it off.
Yeah. How does it have no magnetic field? How come we have all this stuff that Mars doesn't have?
Well, we're bigger. We have a core, a liquid core.
Yeah,
that's
but why
still
does
liquid.
Mars have a core? Does Mars
smaller,
not...
solidified more quickly.
But Uranus is bigger, and it doesn't have a core.
Different composition in the outer planets.
You mean telling me that in our solar system, we're the only ones with a core?
No, the only one with a liquid core that has a magnetic field. Wow. So we can use compasses here. And also preserve life, which is also an important
interesting. So does that make our planet somewhat unique?
It does, if
we can extrapolate all the exoplanets.
I mean, Mars might have been habitable 4 billion years ago, but it really isn't a very nice place to be right now for life.
Yeah, so it's kind of freakish. Earth is kind of a freakish situation.
Yeah, exactly.
In many ways. Yeah. But it had an atmosphere.
Mars.
Mars did.
Yes.
And what happened to it?
It was lost either because it's too small to hold on to it, in terms of the gravity, or else when the magnetic field of Mars collapsed, then the solar wind...
It had a magnetic field that collapsed.
Collapsed, yep. And that would be abraded off.
How would that magnetic field have been generated without a core?
It had a core that was liquid initially, but then because it was so small of a body, it cooled down so the core became solid.
Exactly. Oh, God. Is that happening on Earth? Could that happen on Earth?
Yeah, the core is slowly solidifying on Earth.
Is it something we should worry about, or is the Mayan apocalypse going to take care of that?
That's a good question. Yeah. People have made the calculations that it'll be maybe 20 billion years before our core is solid, so I wouldn't worry about it right now.
I'll cross it off my list.
Yes.
Those are the bottom
line. There are other things to worry about.
Yeah, definitely. Do you do some work for NASA?
Yes. Yep.
Can you say sort of what types of things, or is that classified or something?
No. Yeah, you're right. Our work in astrobiology is looking at... the signatures of life that we can tease out of these isotopes, all those fancy titles that you read of these papers. And we use that to look at old rocks on Earth, like this one that I brought today, or else on samples that we might eventually return from Mars someday.
Mm-hmm. And have we made any interesting conclusions or discoveries along these lines?
Well, one of the big things that our group found was that we had a very different iron cycle on Earth about 2.5 billion years ago. In fact, all the metal in this room right here, we now know is cycled by was cycled by bacteria about 2 to 3 billion years ago.
Hmm.
It's kind of interesting. All this iron that we have in the room and everybody uses in their everyday life comes from these things called banded iron formations. Banded iron formations.
Oh, banded iron.
Yeah. And so there are these layered, massive iron formations, and we now know those were all cycled by bacteria. So it's kind of interesting that...
You mean they ate them?
Bacteria actually used iron for respiration. So like we use oxygen for respiration, they used iron.
They consumed them.
Yep, consumed it.
And they released certain forms of gas, as we might?
They would... yeah, different
wouldn't
kinds
be methane,
of gas.
No,
yeah.
Wouldn't be methane.
Not methane, no.
What sort of gas would they release?
They would actually break up organic carbon to make carbon dioxide.
Oh, so that could be life-promoting as well.
Yeah, it could be, right. And then that would feed into photosynthesis, so it's a cycle.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Fascinating stuff.
Crazy.
Yeah. Do you have any instruments on satellites or thing that UW has worked on?
We don't have any on Mars now. We're working with NASA JPL to build some miniature mass spectrometers for future missions.
Miniature mass spectrometers.
Right.
What do they get for one of those?
Those are all custom built, so...
I'd like to have... I'm disappointed with my personal electronics.
Yeah? Maybe you could talk to your refrigerator then. that's what your goal is, right?
The mass spectrometer, what does that do again?
That measures these isotopes, these different masses of different elements. Mm-hmm. And then that we use as a signature for whether this was a signature of ancient life or not.
Yeah. Yep. Doesn't the UW have some of those things orbiting, though? Don't they have some orbiting things that they built?
There are mini mass spectrometers that are also, you know, in orbit. Our own particular group is focused on a future Mars mission.
Okay. I'm looking for Badger Pride here.
You are, I know. Yeah. There is.
Badger Pride in space.
Yep, there is.
Yep. Excellent. Thank you so much, Professor Clark Johnson. Fascinating. Don't forget your rock, because those are hard to come by.
Yeah.
There you go, right. Astrobiologist, University of Wisconsin. Badgers on Mars. Thank you for coming in, Professor. Oh, you got papers to write. This other one here, though, the UTHPB isotope data indicate Phanerozoic age for oxidation of the 3.4 Ga apex basalt.
Ooh.
I'll save this for later. If I can't sleep. Okay. I don't know. I suppose if you could understand it, it would be really fascinating. So he made it understandable, so that's good. Okay. What?
Yes. This is kind of strange.
No, go ahead.
Well, Jeff and I used to have a gig on Friday nights, and for, I don't know, 10 years or something, I would stay at his house. And then just a minute ago, I found out to my horror that he had a Flushmate 3 toilet. And I used it for all those years. My life was in danger. My head, my...
You want the
and
numbers?
Not only the toilet is like, you know, my where I slept was like right on the other side of the wall. So it could have like come right through the wall. Shrapnel. And he changed it, though. It's like, it's safe now.
Jeff, you don't have a Flushmate 3 anymore?
We have one. We had two. Now we have one.
You had the Flushmate 1?
Oh, he had two Flushmate 3.
Oh, you had two Flushmate. You still have the one?
Correct.
You want those? I'll give you those numbers. I'll give you later.
I'm breathing a sigh of relief today.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Could have been a tragedy. Okay. What you going to play now?
Well, you already spilled the beans there, mister.
Okay. Which one is it again?
I'll Take Romance.
I'll Take Romance. Offered to sing it, but no.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Michael Feldman.
Yeah, hey. Okay, should I actually go to a wall drug or just never go and continue being mystified? I would say never go. Because then you always have one thing for a bucket list. I mean, if you're hired up, go to wall drugs. You know, that's easy to do. You know it's going to be an anticlimax if you do go. I went there once, finally. I'm not glad. I can't say I was glad. I did. They do have cold water. They have ice water. That's the big... Have you been there?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
And were you impressed?
Not really.
No.
Did you have the water?
I had some water, yeah. It's dry there around Wall Drug.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And for years, were you thinking I should go there and you never did?
Yeah, and I happened to be passing by and thought I better stop for some water. Yeah.
Now, the thing is now, once you go there, do you ever go back?
I have no reason to go back.
No.
That pretty much sums up. Thank you very much. Okay. I really like that pineapple lamp. Oh, yeah, that is my mother's lamp. You may, I don't know if you've been to my house, right? Not for a long time, yeah. That was her lamp, and it's a wreck, and she would plots, my dear mother, if she saw the shade, for example. It's traveled with us. It used to, and it's totally destroyed, and she would be very upset. Sorry, I needed more cards. Okay. If you're forced to sing, what song would you karaoke? Maybe Town Without Pity, my latest choice. You know, Gene Pitney. Take these eager lips and hold me tight. I'm afraid this kind of joy can't last. Why do they hurt my heart? What a town without pity can do. But I'd have to learn the words, and I got to carry the tune. I always liked that one. That was a good one. But no, that's the only one I'm working on. Where are you during those so-called encore presentations? I'm taking bows during the encore. Thank you for asking. Okay. Leslie Taylor, Madison, Wisconsin psychiatrist. Try to help people feel better about things in life with drugs. Leslie? What are you holding, Leslie? You know. What are you holding? What are you holding? You know, a handshake drugs and some of those?
I
got
to get a prescription.
Oh, okay. But you got those too, I bet, don't you? You got prescriptions, I bet. Okay, thanks. Talk to you later. What do Wisconsin badgers do in the winter? Do you mean the animals or the people?
Animals.
Valerie, what?
The animals.
I've never seen a badger in Wisconsin in my life. Have you ever anyone actually seen a badger? Now, here's a gentleman who's actually seen a badger. What time of year was it?
It was in the fall. It was at Brown County Golf Course before I took a belly putter to my bag. And basically, it was scurrying. Yeah, I still am. I'm having some personal issues right now. And we saw him going, running across the fairway as we were moving, and we decided to move away from where he was running.
Okay. But you didn't see him during winter?
No, it was fall.
Yeah. Do you think maybe he's running off to hibernate? Do they hibernate? I have no idea. I've never seen, you're the only one I've ever heard has actually seen one.
I think he was running because the fairway wasn't the normal place for him to be.
Oh, imagine that.
Me neither.
Yeah. Me neither.
All those belly putters out there, actually he'd be running from that. Okay, that's good. I don't know. If you mean the badgers, the people, what they do during the winter is a Wisconsin badger, male, continues to wear his shorts all winter. His red shorts, red and white, and his bike, and rides his bike over the winter through blizzards. You know, so short, see this guy in shorts on a bike in a blizzard. He's a badger. Huh? True, isn't it? Absolutely true. These guys with shorts, you know. No, I didn't know that. Okay. Dan Day. Where's Dan Day? Hey, Dan, I'll just go over and talk to you because I feel like I'm just lecturing here otherwise, and you're not getting credit for this, so what's the point? Going over here to meet Dan Day. Takes a while to get to Dan Day, and then I got to jump over this, apparently. Ah, boy. Okay, all this to meet Dan Day. I hope it's worth it. Do you mind standing? Hey, Dan, how are you? Good to see you. Can I get you to stand up there so I don't lean over you there? Cause... How are you?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Okay, what do you do for Way of Life?
I work for Pepsi Cola in Madison here.
What do you do for them?
Service technician.
Service what? The Pepsi Cola gets serviced?
The different fountain machines, vending machines, coolers, etc.
Oh, yeah. Cool. But they work pretty well, don't they? I mean, you don't usually see a service guy working your Pepsi machine.
It all depends, though. I mean, we do like different fairs, festivals. We got like Taste of Madison, different events and stuff. So there is sometimes Pepsi people there.
Did you go to Pepsi U to be trained in Pepsi machines?
Yeah, School of Hard Knocks, yeah.
And your question here, Dan, this is, what is this?
Well, in arguments, typically people would say that the point of an argument is to win. Well, that's not usually the point of an argument. What do you think the point is?
The point of an argument is whatever my wife says it is. are you married?
No.
Okay, well, you'll discover that, should that ever befall you.
So, I mean, most people usually to inform or persuade is what I usually think a point of an argument is.
Just to listen and nod your head.
Yes, sir.
Or yes, ma'am. It is. Good to meet you. Pleasure. Only an unmarried man could ask that question. What tips do you have for two North Carolinians wanting to move to Madison, Wisconsin? We have a mental health expert on call today, as a matter of fact. So where are they? North Carolina want to move to Wisconsin. Any particular reason for that or something? Or what are you thinking here?
I am the world's oldest med student, and my last year med school, and I'm thinking about going to the University of Wisconsin for the residency program. So, yeah, great school. Great school. It was a good interview yesterday. I was really impressed.
You could do that online, though, and you wouldn't have to leave North Carolina or something like that.
You're kidding. Why didn't anybody say that?
You? What's your reason?
I'm following him. Yeah, he's my husband.
Oh, you're with him. Okay, well, that's too bad, kind of. Okay. All right, well, nice to meet you. Well, good luck. It's great school. Great school. Can't beat it. Weather. This is just a hint. Is this the first time you've been here?
They said that it never gets below freezing here and that there's no snow and that it's just really tropical year-round. This is like the coldest it gets. That's what they said yesterday during the year.
We're on a thermal heat sink.
Like a volcano or something.
It's more like the thing that flows around the Gulf of Mexico and then comes up right up the Mississippi, up the St. Croix there, and it takes a turn onto the Fox River. So we have these thermal currents coming right up the Fox River. And that's what we're feeling right now.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay, well, good. Good. That's Elizabeth and Mike. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz, because that's what you're here for, isn't it? Or perhaps no reason. Is that, are you here for the quiz?
Maybe.
Startled you, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, sure.
How are you?
I'm fine, how about you?
This is the quiz part of the show, so for example, if you wanted to play it, you could volunteer, but it's unlikely. Judging from...
Sure, I'll play the quiz.
Oh, you want to play it? I wasn't trying to force you to. Okay. Well, wait a minute, though. Because it's like pulling teeth. This is why I quit teaching, you know, because no one volunteered for anything. And now I'm back in that same situation, and you are?
I'm Victor.
Victor? Yeah. How you doing?
I'm fine. How about you?
You're from around here, Victor?
Yeah, I live in Madison.
You do? Yeah. Are they with you, these guys?
Yeah, this is a group. Yeah. We're a
trivia. What sort of group is this?
A trivia team.
A trivia team? Oh, no. I pulled a trivia team guy out to play the quiz. It's never happened before. So you guys know all the questions, probably, all that?
No, we're just good guessers.
Give me one good reason, Victor, why you should play this quiz.
Because you told me to.
I told you to. All right, which way you want to go? Probably shorter this way. Come on, Victor. Mr. Trivia Guy. This is not really trivia, Victor, but it is. Here, just follow me. Walk this way. Many have tried. Okay, well, watch out for the cords and the cables. Lawsuit waiting to happen. Okay. Victor, come on. Give him a little encouragement. Victor. And to Victor will belong the spoils if he wins the quiz. So that's pretty exciting. Do you do something for a living besides trivia?
Yeah. I work at Epic. It's a healthcare software company in Verona.
Everyone works at Epic.
Yeah.
Tell me something I haven't heard before. your software what?
I do technical services, so if they're having issues with the software, they call me.
Oh, God, you must get a lot of calls. Have you heard from my wife recently? Because she was just on, she has that where she works. Like,
No, I don't work with any folks in Wisconsin, really.
Oh, okay, so. You're lucky. Oh, no, I didn't say that. A lot of issues with it. Okay, Victor, someone out there will play along with you. You're not familiar with this quiz, really.
Actually, the first time I heard it was with Aunt Carrie, who was the person who performed, so yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay, it's first time. But you've done a lot of trivia competitions, and those are a little different, right?
A little bit different. It's a team effort.
A team, like a college bowl or something like that?
Through Team Trivia Wisconsin, so it's like a bar trivia.
So you're in a tavern.
Yes.
You've had a drink or two.
Yep.
That's when my trivia gets best. I get really trivia after two. Three, I'm beyond all trivia. And then you play other teams?
Yep, that's right.
And is there someone, like a guy in front?
Yeah, there's a guy who's reading the questions, and I guess you get to wager and decide whether you're confident in your answer or not. So
you wager money?
Wager points.
Wager points.
And then you eventually win.
Can you cash in your points at a certain point?
At a certain point, they give prizes to the top three teams, and you like usually win like a gift certificate.
Bar rail prizes?
Yeah. Or actually vouchers to this show, too.
Oh, you won your voucher to this show at a trivia con.
Yeah.
This gets worse and worse, Victor. All right, so good. This will pay off for you double. And how does someone play along with Victor on this quiz, Sarah?
This is an encore broadcast of What Do You Know, so you'll only get to leave us a message if you call our hotline.
Now, there is only one species known that can actually grow young. That is, it can age, and then it can grow backward again. It's known as the immortal what? That's the question. If you know which species, which animal can actually grow younger. That's the number to go. What was that number again?
The number is 1.
No, it's all right. They're on there. They're already on there. They call before they know what the question is, Sarah.
They're eager.
That's one word for it. Jill.
Hello.
You're Jill?
Yes, I'm Jill.
Jill, do you know what the question is?
Yes. What is the species that can grow backwards?
Oh, okay. But you didn't know that when you called, right?
No.
All right, that's okay. I'm not going to hold it against you. It happens all the time. You know what the species is, though, the only one that can grow younger.
Boy, I've always wanted to play the quiz, because I saw you twice in Carbondale.
Oh, yeah? How was I?
It was great.
Oh,
great.
I like Carbondale. It's
grow
great.
Younger.
Carbondale, we call it.
Give any hints about, you know, whether it's mammal or
How are the Salukis doing this year?
They're doing okay, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't been following them as closely as they should.
No.
Pretty busy.
Yeah.
Species that can grow.
Yeah, there's only one species that we know of that actually can grow younger. It ages and then it grows backward, and then it goes older again, and it can go on indefinitely. Hence the immortal something or other.
How about an earthworm?
Nope. Sorry.
Okay.
Go, Salukis.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Dusty's on the line from Joplin, Missouri. You guys will applaud anything, won't you? It's really cute. I like that. Dusty is from Joplin, Missouri. Hey, Dusty.
Howdy. How's it going today?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Oh, doing okay.
Yeah, good. I'm glad to hear it. You know the species that can actually grow younger?
I was actually, when I called in, I was thinking it was like a tree of some sort.
Oh.
But,
No. It wasn't when you called in, anyway.
Let's see here.
Yeah. Kind of either you know or you don't, I guess.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Bird of some sort would be my guess.
No, sorry, Dusty.
I appreciate it.
But I'll talk to you again, I know.
Hey,
that.
Hey, thanks,
all right, bye. Now, Dave.
Yes, sir.
Dave is right here, not right here, but he's in Eau Claire in our fair state.
Yes.
Dave, you know this one, don't you?
I do.
What is it, Dave?
It's a jellyfish.
Yes, the immortal jellyfish. The immortal jellyfish, the Teratopsis darayi. Teratopsis is the name to remember. Yeah, immortal jellyfish, and it's kind of unique in that regard. Dave, are you a biologist or something?
No, I'm a retired educator.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
You can retire from educating, huh? That's cool. Now, you don't have to educate anyone anymore. That's so
no,
cool.
No, but you never stop learning.
No. Yes, you do. I've stopped learning. I don't think I've learned any. Well, no, I actually learn things all the time. You're right. You're right about that. What do you do in your retirement, though, Dave? What do you do for fun?
Oh, all sorts of things. I actually picked up curling.
Curling?
Yes.
No kidding.
Which is a great Wisconsin sport.
Yeah, it is. True. And is it hard to learn?
It's hard to be good at it.
Yeah. Are you on a curling team?
Yes, I have two brothers, both of whom curls me, and then a couple of other buddies.
Yeah. What's your team called, Dave?
The Smiling Moose.
Smiling Moose.
Yes.
Okay. I'll look for you. Where are you in the standings right now, Dave?
Middle of the road.
Right in the middle of the standings. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good for a young team, young curling team.
Yeah, we're not really young, but we're a new team.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Dave, this is Victor.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
He's right, in everybody. Software and trivia.
Oh, good. So, well, then I'll just rely on you, Victor.
Yeah, he's a good resource. Use it for a resource, if nothing else. All right, so two of you work as a team, Dave and Victor, and we have various categories. Sarah, what are they?
They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay, Dave, what would you like?
How about things you should have learned in school?
Okay, school it is. Okay, imply something, then infer it.
Imply something.
Work on this with them.
Okay.
Just to show you know the difference between implying and inferring.
Victor, you want to take this one? See, I was, as a teacher, I just was direct. I never inferred or implied.
No, you didn't. What did you teach?
I taught history, criminal law, and economics.
Okay. No implications there, that's for sure.
No. Imply something, then infer it.
I'll tell you what. If you can't do that, tell me the difference between implying something and inferring something.
Well, when you imply something... And then, Victor, you can take the infer part.
Sure.
When you imply something, you say something that isn't directly stated, but the person you're saying it to gets the idea.
Okay. And to infer?
And then they're on the receiving end, aren't they?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Ah. So that you could infer from something that was implied.
Correct.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to accept that. I think it's a beautiful and a...
Way to go, Victor.
A touching explanation of it.
That's one right and zero wrong.
Okay, what's left there, Sarah?
Current events, people, places, science, or odds and ends.
I called you Sarah. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
Okay. I think I'll do places.
Places, all right. Cross-eyed Heidi at the Leipzig Zoo has 65,000 Facebook friends. That's so many more than I have. And a YouTube hit song, not bad for a what? What sort of animal is cross-eyed Heidi at the Leipzig Zoo? World famous.
Is Heidi famous or the Leipzig Zoo?
Well, the zoo is pretty well known, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it a...
Applaud if you've heard of the Leipzig Zoo. Yeah, well, well known.
Okay, well, so there you go.
Is it a lion, maybe?
Cross-eyed
lion, you think?
I don't know.
You should know this. This is right up your alley, isn't it? Sure, if ever there was. Cross-eyed Heidi, Leipzig Zoo, what kind of animal is she? Dave, you don't know?
Boy, Victor? I don't.
Okay, I have to call time. It's a possum. She's a possum.
A possum?
Yeah, they tend to be cross-eyed. Applauding their failure, isn't that sweet?
That's one wrong and one right.
Okay, don't worry about it. You'll come back from this. What's left there?
We have current events, people, science, or odds and ends.
Dave?
Let's go with people.
Is there any drinking involved in curling? I mean, afterwards?
Both before, during, and after.
You don't hold a beer when you're throwing those heavy stones down.
No, but they do have places where you can set them.
On the stone itself? Is there a little cup holder on your stone?
No, on each end of the rink.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a very social sport.
I'm sorry, what did you want, Dave?
People.
People, okay. percentage of brides who report nagging doubts. These are people who've just married, apparently.
Oh, can we have within 50% there?
Yeah, I'll give you several things here. Okay. Percentage of brides who report having still having nagging doubts, or right up to the moment, apparently. Is it 40, 60, or 80% of brides who report they have nagging doubts about the whole enterprise?
Are you married, Victor?
No, I'm not.
Well, my wife had no doubts. So.
Okay. No nagging either, huh?
No.
That's pretty good.
No.
Good one there.
What are you thinking, Victor?
I'm hopeful maybe 40%.
Good guesser. He's a good guesser. Remember that.
David. Yeah. I'm going to be hopeful with you.
40%, yes, 40%. The nagging doubts.
Right.
They don't ask about the guys because, you know, who cares? Your problem, buddy. Yes.
Two right, zero wrong. Oh, no, that's wrong. One wrong.
One wrong, okay.
That's right.
And what remains there?
Current events, science, or odds and ends?
Let's do current events.
Current events. How do you like this kind of trivia?
It's fine.
It's fine. You can't win drinks at a bar.
No,
big deal.
Right, right.
What'd you say? Current events?
Yep, current
events. Current
events.
Oh, right on this, okay. The FedEx package was code, military code, for what sensitive delivery?
The package.
Who said that? Well, that was you.
The package.
FedEx package was a code name for a very sensitive delivery that has wide implications, widely discussed, but just came out now that was the name, the code for the package being delivered. What was that package? FedEx package, it was called.
FedEx package.
Might have seen this in the news, might not have. Might have heard it on All Things Considered or one of those. Any idea what that FedEx package just came out now? That was the code name for this? No?
No.
No.
Dave,
yeah.
No?
No.
Bin Laden. It was the Bin Laden.
Ah.
Yes, he was called the FedEx package.
Interesting.
Is arriving. That's sort of like the code we have at Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now.
That's so, right.
So that would be what?
Two right, two wrong.
That's what I have, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What's left then?
Science or odds and ends.
So this is it then.
This
gotta,
is it.
They got to get
it, yeah.
Science
or die here.
Odds and ends. Dave?
What do you like, Victor, between those two?
I like science.
All right, let's go with science.
Okay, you asked for it. The Gouldian finches. They have several different color caps. Their caps, their heads, their caps. Now, what I want to know is the Gouldian finches with black caps almost always choose mates with one of the following caps, also black caps. Yellow caps or red caps? The Gouldian finch.
Well, we got a 1 in 3 chance here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Gouldian finches with black caps almost always choose mates with black, yellow, or red caps.
What kind of cap do you like, Michael?
Well, it depends who it's on, really.
Yeah.
Totally dependent on it.
You got any sense at all, Victor?
I don't know. I like yellow, but I don't know.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Okay, well, that's
I guess I don't like yellow.
No.
No, how about with black? You like black? Victor?
Yeah, that's fine. Black will work, too.
I like black.
So you're saying that the Gouldian finch with black caps almost always choose mates?
I think the audience is telling me red.
Whose show is it? Do you see this? Like,
yeah.
The audience is, what do you know? No, I don't think so. Michael Feldman's, what do you know?
Well, you have the final say, Victor.
What are you leaning towards?
Let's lean towards red.
Yeah.
Okay. Black.
What were you thinking originally, black, Dave, when you were, before this audience got involved?
Yeah, I did say black. Didn't
yeah,
I?
You did, didn't
I'm
you?
I'm going to stick with that.
Do you want to explain your why you said that?
I said that because birds of a feather flock together.
Interesting.
That'll work for me too.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Yes, black.
Hey.
Almost always, unless you cover one eye, and then they go for their red cap. It's a very strange phenomenon. We don't know what it means, but congratulations.
Victor, you've won your way to a healthier lifestyle with a selection of Funky Monkey snacks, freeze-dried raw fruit slices and pieces with no added sugars, colors, flavors, or preservatives from Funky Monkey, a fruit that crunches. Dave, you'll be the star attraction at your next Nuministic Club meeting with the exceptionally attractive What Do You Know Silver Jubilee Anniversary Quarter, designed by Nora Feldman, depicting President George Michael Feldman, on heads and the fabulous Feldmingo on tails. And both of you can treat yourself to tunes like Happy Man Blues, Burn That Clutch Out, and Herbal Tea on No Part of Nothing, the debut CD from Runaway Planet, and keep friends and foes alike entertained playing What Do You Know the Party Game from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at NotMuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Well, thank Victor, you very much.
Victor, cleaned up. Thanks for playing the quiz. We'll wean you from that trivia stuff. Dave, hang on for a second. We'll get that to you.
Okay.
Thanks for playing.
You bet.
Well done. Do we have time enough, you think?
I think so.
Okay, here it is.
Let's do it.
Town of the Week, Sarah Nix.
Our town of the week is Beeville, Texas. That's the county seat of Bee County. It's on Poesta Creek at the intersection of U.S. Highway 181, State Highway 59, and the Southern Pacific Railroad in central Bee County.
Is it B-E-E?
It is, like Bzz-Bee, yeah.
Okay.
When Bee County was organized in 1858, the county seat was founded at a site on the east bank of Medio Creek, 7 miles east of the current site of the community. Mm-hmm. The first county seat was known as Beeville on the Medio. This location proved inconvenient, and in 1859, Anne Burke Carroll, Patrick Carroll, and Patrick Burke donated land for a town site at the current location of Beeville. In 1860, the first courthouse was erected, and the Beeville Masonic Lodge built a second story for its meetings. Yeah. The community contributed a company of men to the Confederate Army during the Civil War. Oh. Beeville incorporated for the first time in 1890, but the corporation was dissolved the following year.
Oh.
In 1900, the population had grown to 2,311. In spite of the boost given the local economy by the oil industry, Beeville was hit hard by the Great Depression in the 1930s.
Sure.
A WPA office was opened in the community, and government-funded projects improved city streets. Mm-hmm. During World War II, Beeville benefited from the construction of the Naval Auxiliary Air Station at Chase Airfield, which eventually became the Naval Air Station Beeville. The base trained naval aviators from 1943 through 1946 and then was temporarily deactivated. In response to the demands of the Korean War, the field was reopened in 1952 and continued to train pilots until its closing in 1992. The first school in Beeville was held in a private home in 1860. The first school building was built in 1877. Yeah. The Beeville School District had 10 schools in the mid-1980s, with Bee County College opening in 1967. In 1990, the town's economy was focused on county government, oil field services, and agribusiness. Western Week was held every October in the City Coliseum.
October.
And that's our town of the week, Beeville, Texas.
Thank you. And we've been dialing here, and successfully, Cynthia's on the line from Beeville to find out if our information is, in fact, correct, and maybe to tell us a little more. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi.
How are you? I'm Michael Feldman from What Do You Know?
It's very nice to meet you over the phone.
Nice to meet you as well. You heard what Sarah had to say about Beeville. Anything you want to add or subtract from that?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm not a native of Beeville. I've only been here just under 2 years.
Uh-huh.
But it's a wonderful little town.
Yeah.
We just have some really beautiful buildings. My favorite is our library, which I work at.
Oh, okay.
It's a lovely, lovely building. It's supported, of course, by the city and county and also by a private foundation, the Joe Barnhart Foundation. The building was built in 1906. It was a hardware store. It was briefly a set of apartments for newlyweds, and now it's our lovely library.
Oh, cool.
We also have an amazing courthouse across the street. It's burned down in 1914, but it's been rebuilt. It's quite lovely. And in honor of the base and all of our veterans and active service people, we have a gorgeous F-4 jet right across the street.
An F-4? Is it an active, is it a functional one?
I don't think so. The windshield's all painted black, so I'm guessing that it's not.
Well, those guys like their privacy, though. It might just be that. Cool. That's really cool.
If we were, great town.
If we were coming to Beeville, where would you take us if we were just going out for a little libation or a little fun, or where would we go?
Well, we have some options. The Dog and Bee is a wonderful little British-style pub. They have a great menu and some very interesting bottled import beers.
Sounds good.
We also have some good local restaurants. Hensley's is wonderful for lunch. They always have these amazing specials, and everything there is homemade. Nothing comes out of a can or a box. For something a little heartier, perhaps as the winter comes on, we could go down to the German restaurant, the Bear Guest House, with its lovely proprietor, who is actually from Germany. So you know her food's also very authentic. We have a couple of other little cute places. We have Artie's, which is great for lunch and breakfast, and assorted taquerias. So
fantastic.
That's where I
take you. You're a very good spokeswoman for Beeville.
I really love this town. They've been very welcoming to me.
Thank you, Cynthia. We got to run here, but we have a little something for you for being so nice.
We do. Cynthia will be sending you the Pride of America's Dairyland in a scrumptious selection of 10 premium certified organic cheeses and butters from Lafarge, Wisconsin's Organic Valley family of farms.
Thanks, Cynthia, from our Town of the Week, Beeville, Texas.
Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer, with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, and Diana Cook. Our technical director is Tom Blaine, with help from Brad Kohlberg and Aubrey Ralph. Very special thanks to our guests, Joe Queenan and Clark Johnson. I'm Sarah Nix, hoping you'll join us next week for more of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know?
PRI, Public Radio International.